is here to stay, 13 minutes before 5 o'clock. This week on Toronto's Finest, we meet a personality whose life and family are as well known to many listeners as their own, although they've probably never met him. Our guest this week is Gary Lawton, the editor emeritus of the Toronto Star, best known for the gently humorous column he's been writing for more than 26 years. Gary Lawton joins me now. Welcome.
Thank you, Stan, and thank you for playing Our Love is Here to Stay.
Now, let me guess, that must be your song.
It is. Now, I mean, I can tell you all kinds of stories about it.
Go ahead.
All right. The first of all, you know the song was written by George Gershwin. The lyrics are by Ira. The verse to that thing is very clever. It's the more I read the papers, the less I comprehend the world and all its capers and how it all will end. Nothing seems to be lasting, but that isn't our affair. We've got something permanent, I mean in the way we care. Now that is the verse, then you go into our love is, you know, it's very clear our love is here to stay. But what most people don't realize, that the song was written, I think it was 1937. It was the year Gershwin wrote it. It was the last song George Gershwin wrote. And he died before the lyric to it was written. Ira wrote the lyric to it afterward. And when you know the lyric, and you know that he had died, it's a love song for one brother for another.
Okay.
It's not a man and a woman. And it's a song that's special to me. And, of course, it was in American in Paris. And Leslie Caron, who was, I think, something like 18 years of age at the time, and Gene Kelly did that wonderful scene purportedly by the Seine. And she danced and he danced and so on. So that has been our song. And I once gave my wife a necklace. And the first 10 notes of that have been inscribed in it on George Gershwin's own hand, because I found a book where Gershwin had done the music, and I got cut it out of the book, and I had a jeweler duplicate it. So it's da 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 da. So those notes are inscribed on it. So whenever I hear that, or whenever I think of American in Paris, I think the other story I can tell you about it. I remember telling Tony Bennett this story once. He was in town at the Royal York, and we had lunch at the Star. And I told him how much this song meant to me, that I always liked that one. There's lots of songs I like, but that one especially. So Bennett, of course, is an artist. So about a week later, what arrived at the Star, here's a picture of the Toronto skyline, and Bennett wrote the verse to the song, the verse I just quoted to you, and it's written in the corner of the song, Our Love is Here to Stay. So that's on our wall at home.
Yeah, nice memento to have.
Yeah, it is. But it's such a lovely song, and the feeling is so nice about it that always wish I'd met Ira Gershwin. But his words always intrigue me, his rhyme schemes.
You've been writing your column about your family now for 26 years, and you know, wrote for a good 15 years before that. But it's the column about your family that interests me, because I've often wondered, Have there been times in your family relationships that either your wife or your kids have said, that's it, that's the last straw, don't ever mention me in that column again?
I remember Jane once, she said that she was resigning from the column. She was going to take a sabbatical from the column. I don't know what I had written. But no, they're very tolerant of me. They're nice people. They're all much nicer than me. They take after Jackie, frankly. But no, they never seem to get upset about it. They take it. It's like the doctor's kid who gets pharmaceutical samples, I guess. I don't know. They take it in their stride, and I don't think it's affected them in it at all.
Not even in those sensitive teenage years when, you know, you're so concerned about what your friends were thinking. Didn't she ever come home and say, Dad, you're embarrassing me?
One thing that she did tell me, I remember once, she was plucking her eyebrows to make sure that they were cleanly defined. And I remember she gave me instructions, Dad, don't ever write about me plucking my eyebrows. That's too personal.
Was that like waving a red flag at a bolo to you? Or?
No, I didn't do it. I wouldn't. I mean, I've been so amused by them. I still am so entertained by them. They are very funny people.
What was it that got you writing about them in the first place?
Well, I came to the Star. I've been a sports columnist for 12 years with the Hamilton Spectator. And they called me up and they said, Pierre Burton was leaving at that time. This is 1962. So, excuse me. Anyway, Milt Dunnell was the one who called me, and he's the sports columnist. And he said, would you like to come to the Star, Gary? I thought he was leaving. And I said, you're not going to retire, Milt. I mean, Milt is now 83, still writing the best sports column in North America. It's so ludicrous. Anyway, I said, I don't know. And he said, no, not a sports column, a general column. So I came over after much coaxing, because I really didn't want to come to Toronto. I didn't want to, I thought the job wouldn't last. I didn't want to do a general column. I was very nervous about it. And somehow I fell into the habit of writing about this young family that I had. And I don't know why particularly. I was always amused by them, Stan. The kids have always had good lines. I remember Stephen, the first time that he ever babysat his younger brother and sister, I came home and I said, "Stephen, were there any calls tonight?" And he says, "No, Dad, but a couple of close ones." I mean, that kind of thing. The kids have got smart mouths, in other words, and they're still extremely funny people. So I just sat. I'm sort of the family secretary.
Do you ever get tired of it after 26 years of writing about them? Do you ever want to, you know, start to write about something else or leave it to rest? Give them some privacy?
Well, it's funny when you talk about it. I worry about the audiences, because sometimes the audience will tell you, who cares about your kids? Who cares about your life? Who write about meaningful things? And I do try to write about meaningful ways of things in my own way. But I don't know what the audience is. When I write about them, I don't like people to think I'm writing about them particularly. When I wrote, I don't do it anymore, about Stephen taking his first steps, I wasn't talking about Stephen's first steps, but I wanted the reader to, in his own mind, remember, do you remember when, you know, Ramon or whatever it was took his first steps? So you try to reach something that's common to human beings, and the thing that's common to us is ourselves and our families. And I found that by telling them my experiences, maybe some people said, you know, we're not so strange after all. We've all gone through the same thing, and it's kind of comforting to know that, yeah, remember when, we've all got fathers, mothers, children, wives, friends, brothers, sisters. It's so common to everybody. It's the one thing, humanity.
Did you set out to be a journalist and a writer?
No. When I was at university, Lester Pearson was one of my early heroes. I've had several people who are very key in my life, and Lester Pearson had gone to my old high school in Hamilton Central Collegiate, and he'd become external affairs, et cetera, et cetera. And I had always thought this was wonderful, and I corresponded with him over a couple of things that I was interested in for the yearbook and all this. So when I got to university, took history, and I was going to external affairs. I was going to save the world.
Yes.
And you can see I didn't go into external affairs, therefore the world has not been saved. But anyway, I got into it, and in my second year at university, I had worked at the newspaper I started when I was 12, and I'm 60 now, so you know how many years that is. So at 12 years of age, I was working as a part-time office boy after school. My father had been with Canadian Press, and he'd been with them 50 years when he retired finally. So I had that background in the press. My mother had worked it with the Winnipeg Free Press. They had met there. But when I got to university, it was external affairs and history until I got waylaid by a friend of mine named Bill Klein, who now operates Klein Shirts. I don't know if that shirt you're wearing right now is a Klein shirt or not, but Well, in any case,
should it be?
Well, he does a very nice shirt.
Makes a nice shirt, doesn't he? I'll have to look him up.
But in any case, he was writing the sports column. He decided to stop writing it. He said, "I know that you've been involved, et cetera, in a peripheral way. Would you like to write it?" That was 1948. So that's 41 years ago. I started writing a column September of 1948. And then I found out that I guess it's ego. I mean, Stan, what you're doing, what I'm doing, I suppose what everybody does, there's some sense of identity. Because when I was in grade 13, when I was 16 years old, skinny kid, more Adam's apple than anything. The girls certainly didn't notice me. I wasn't on any of the sports teams because they're all bigger and stronger and so on.
Sounds vaguely familiar.
Well, yeah. Well, then you finally write something like a column, and people on the campus start saying, "Hey, hi there." And you got some sense of recognition. All of a sudden, I thought, you know, this is kind of nice. So I got involved with it, became editor of the university newspaper, met my wife when I was 28 years of age, and have lived happily ever after.
You won a lot of awards for your column. Is there an award that stands out more than the others, one that you're happier with than the others?
Well, two of my books have won Leacock Awards, so those are very important to me, because when I was young, Leacock was the guy. We always tried to write like Leacock and all this stuff. And when I got into the newspaper business, one of the first people I made a point of meeting was George Leacock, who was Stephen Leacock's brother. Leacock died in 1944, throat cancer, and I never knew him, but his brother, who was a great raconteur, lived here, and I came over and met him and so on. It was a great thrill for me. Then I met Stephen Leacock's son, Stevie, young Stevie, who had serious physical problems, actually. So that was very important, the Leacock thing to me. And Stephen, my oldest boy, is Stephen Joseph Lawton, Stephen after Stephen Leacock, Joseph after my father. So when I finally got the Leacock Award, I was touched by it. I don't think that professionally nothing has touched me like that. And then when I won a second one, I thought, my God, the first one wasn't a fluke. Maybe I really deserved it, which I don't think is possible.
You've been a success at what you've chosen to do. Do you have any secret unfulfilled ambitions?
Well, when you say a success, depends what you mean. I think no man is a success to himself at night, and I'm not trying to be modest or anything. I've never written what I wanted to write, the perfect column, the perfect story. It's never good enough, but I don't think any secret ambitions particularly. I'm so lucky. I've got a great family. I feel good. This country's been awfully good to me. The paper's been good to me. I think I should go in tomorrow and tell them I'm going to take a reduction in dough. I've convinced myself that I'm making too much money.
Okay. We've got you on tape saying that. We'll send it over to the Star this evening. I'm sure they'll be ready for you in the morning.
Okay.
Thanks for coming in this afternoon. My guest on Toronto's Finest has been Gary Lawton, columnist at the Toronto Star and editor emeritus of that newspaper.